This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Canada's first ever national mental health strategy was released on May 8, 2012, after 5 years of extensive consultations across the country. The strategy is called Changing Directions, Changing Lives, and it represents a blueprint for change, which includes 6 strategic directions. The strategy focuses on improving mental health and well-being for all people living in Canada and on creating a mental health system that can truly meet the needs of people of all ages living with mental health problems and illnesses and their families. What are the challenges faced by families facing mental illness in a child or parent? And what does Canada's new mental health strategy have to say about it? We're joined on the phone by Jane Duval, Executive Director of the British Columbia Schizophrenia Society.
Welcome to People First Radio, Jane.
Thank you.
Jane, the strategy states that the false blaming of families must be stopped and everything possible should be done to facilitate their becoming partners in the care and treatment of their loved ones. Tell us more about this phenomenon of false blaming and how it can lead to families being excluded.
Well, yes, I think it's very interesting. It's a historical phenomenon, actually, because it comes from the time when we had no ability to look into the brain and see what was going on. We did not understand that illnesses like schizophrenia, for example, were brain diseases. So in the absence of that information, people were all taking their best guess. And I suppose the most popular guesses were probably made by people like Sigmund Freud, and his theories were very, very popular for many years. And the theories were based on the fact that, for example, families caused people to be mentally ill. So in particular, mothers came in for a huge amount of the blame. So they had an expression called schizophrenogenic mothers, which meant that you put your child in a double bind. You were either too cold or you were over-involved. It was all very confusing, and you had to study it for many, many years to try and understand it. In any case, it was completely incorrect. These are brain illnesses. This is an illness just like diabetes, for example.
The new mental health strategy also recommends removing financial barriers for children and youth and their families to access psychotherapies and clinical counseling. So I gather that there's also significant financial barriers that can stand in the way of people obtaining the help they need. Tell us more about that.
Yes, there are. And I think even before you get to the point of things like psychosocial rehab or counseling, for example, there are certainly barriers to treatment around basic medical care services, such as access to medications, access to hospital treatment, access to doctors who can actually help you to begin to cope with the medical needs of the illness. That's the first barrier that most people come up against. The second thing, of course, is if the person is significantly disabled by their illness, even once the treatment is, there's good treatment and it works, but most people with schizophrenia are unable to actually hold a job and they have some difficulties organizing their daily lives. This is not to say they're not intelligent, they're usually extremely intelligent, but it's a question of the impaired executive functioning that comes along with the illness. It's part of a cognitive deficit that's part of the illness. In that case, then the person is going to require significant support through the rest of their life in terms of subsidized housing or if they're living with their family, care that where the family could get some respite, that type of thing.
Jane, you have personal experience with mental illness in a family member. What were the specific challenges you faced as a mother?
I think in the beginning, particularly for our family, because we did not have anybody with mental illness in our family, we were confused about the behaviors we were seeing in our son. We took it, a lot of it is just, the fact that he didn't want to behave or he wouldn't behave, where in fact he couldn't behave, and it took us a long time to actually see that this this bright boy who was about to start university and who had been very active in sports and had a very full life was now basically somebody who just hid in his bedroom upstairs and behaved in a very kind of scary manner. So until we actually got him into the hospital and had a proper assessment, diagnosis, and treatment, we were really quite confused. That was the beginning. And I think after that, once he had a diagnosis of schizophrenia, which took quite a while, we were then shut out of his treatment. So as a mother, that was extremely difficult for me because when you have a child who's ill, even if that child is 19 years old, which he was at the time, you're very concerned about his health and well-being. And if the doctors are not giving you any information, that we were told that the information was confidential, where they couldn't share it with us, all that type of thing. There's a whole lot of nonsense goes on around this diagnosis and confidentiality when, in fact, the family is desperately needed to help the person when they get out of hospital to cope with their illness and to know about the medications and to know about the illness and what it entails. But so that was the biggest challenge, was actually trying to get information in the beginning so that we could help our son.
This is People First Radio, only on CHLY 101.7 FM and streaming at chly.ca.
Canada's new mental health strategy was developed after a five-year-long consultation process. It's called Changing Directions, Changing Lives, and it makes every effort to put families into the center of the response to mental illness and the fostering of mental health. Families, whether relatives or people drawn from broader circles of support, are critical partners in the journey of recovery from mental illness. Families often provide the bulk of support and care and can be overtaken by stress and grief from the impact of mental illness and suicide. Canada's new strategy for mental health says it's critical that families have access to the information and resources they need to sustain themselves and that their voices be heard in the mental health system. Failure to support families undermines mental health across the population, leads to poorer outcomes for people living with mental health problems and illnesses, and increases costs to the system. The strategy also states that the unique role of families in fostering recovery and well-being across the lifespan must be better recognized. We're speaking with Jane Duvall, Executive Director of the British Columbia Schizophrenia Society.
Jane, the new mental health strategy recommends enhancing support for families to foster recovery and well-being, provide care, and meet their own needs in handling stress and loss. What would those supports look like? In a practical sense, what's required?
My opinion is for family members that what's desperately needed most of all is information about the illness, and they absolutely must have that in order to begin to help their loved one. And the next thing is information about how your local mental health services work, because once you understand that, you can begin to actually access services on behalf of your ill relative. And those two things combined are what we do here at the BC Schizophrenia Society. We actually empower families with that information so that they can begin to actually make some real changes. However, what needs to happen is, of course, more and better resources throughout the system. We all know, for example, in Vancouver, what the east end of Vancouver looks like. There's many, many very ill people on the street, untreated, literally be neglected and abandoned by the healthcare system. So besides involving families and providing things like respite services for family caregivers, we certainly need much better access to hospitalization and to community support services. We really need a lot more in the way of more and better supported housing. I think, for example, that mental illness probably should somehow come to be a budget line item on people's budgets. Right now, it seems to be the neglected cousin of the whole healthcare system. It's at the bottom of the heap, and certainly people with schizophrenia, when you look at the mental health portfolio, they're at the bottom of that heap. So,
the mental health strategy states that people living with mental health problems and illnesses and their family members are experts by their own experience, and it recommends their active involvement in decision-making. Tell us more about the whole decision-making aspect and involving family members in it.
Yes, well, I think certainly at an individual level, that means that the family absolutely must be included in the treatment planning. Because let's face it, those are the people that most of us depend on our families throughout our lifetimes for the most basic kind of support. So it's no different for people with very serious mental illnesses. It's the family that is going to be there. Professionals will come and go over the years, but the family will always be there. And, you know, just because somebody has this illness, the family doesn't stop loving them and caring for them. And in some sense, the system, as it is at the moment, asks the family to do that by saying that they're invoking the confidentiality and privacy sort of laws, et cetera, and trying to keep the family out of the treatment process. Well, that really has to stop immediately. And actually, in BC, we have very good laws about that, but a lot of people don't understand them. And also ensuring that the family voice is heard at the level of, for example, the regional health authorities, that there is a family advisory council made up of family members that actually can speak to the issues and have some input into policy and decision-making at the level of the regional health authority.
Tell us a little bit more about peer support, which is mentioned specifically amongst a number of things in the strategy. Peer support and how it can help families experiencing mental illness.
The peer support programs that are very helpful, I think, for families are, generally speaking, again, information and access. So if you can do those things and you can have, for example, we have a program at the Schizophrenia Society called Strengthening Families Together, which is very similar to the Strongest Families that you mentioned in Nova Scotia. And this is actually a Schizophrenia Society of Canada program, and it's available right across the country. And we have, throughout British Columbia, we have 20 coordinators who deliver this program. And we also train family members. So that is a peer support program where you've got families helping families and teaching what is essentially a 10-week course for free to family members. So you've got families helping families. And I think that is extremely powerful because family member often is the person who can tell you, for example, where the good doctors are, how to get access to disability benefits if your loved one requires that. And also they will tell you within your local health system who to, they'll give you the names of who to go to and who to see and where to go. And also sometimes very good information on who not to bother wasting your time with. That can be invaluable.
Jane, I understand that today is a special day for British Columbia Schizophrenia Society, and I'm wondering in the last few moments here if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
It is. It's a very special day for us. It's first of all, it's National Schizophrenia Awareness Day, May 24th, throughout the country. So we will be participating along with all the other provinces who have schizophrenia societies across Canada. That's all provinces. So the major thing here in Vancouver, of course, will be the lighting up of a very iconic building, which is BC Place, and it'll be all lit up purple for today in honor of Schizophrenia Awareness Day. Everybody I know in the office and everybody I've seen this morning is wearing purple. We've had wonderful volunteers out at the SkyTrain stations and downtown Vancouver handing out goodie baskets, and everybody's wearing purple in honor of this day. So that is, for us, part of the celebration. Another part of our celebration is for the BC Schizophrenia Society. We are, this is our 30th anniversary, so we're combining the two and having quite a big celebration here in Vancouver for our donors and our members and our partners that we work with all the time.
Jane Duvall, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It was much appreciated.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Jane Duvall is Executive Director of the British Columbia Schizophrenia Society. You can find BCSS online at bcss.org. You can access copies of the new Canadian Strategy for Mental Health online at mentalhealthcommission.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.